Hello and welcome to this special installment of the ISF Analyst Insight podcast. We recorded it live in October at the ISF World Congress in Rotterdam on the plenary stage, no less. And it's a great look at the past, present and future of the CISO. We hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we did recording it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this very special edition of the ISF Analyst Insight podcast. My name is Mark Ward. I'm the main host of that podcast. You may know my voice from, if you're familiar with that, if you've subscribed and listened regularly. It's an audience that's growing very fast, so by all means, subscribe to that and boost our numbers. It's a special podcast as well because we're broadcasting, if that's the word, from the ISF Congress in Rotterdam. And we've assembled a stellar cast of information security talent here to debate the issues of the day and hopefully get some questions from the audience as well. Just a bit more on the Analyst Insight podcast. We're always on the lookout for guests with interesting stories to tell who want to share how they got to where they are with their career. So if you want to get involved, by all means, drop us a line and get in touch. So just to go along the line and introduce everybody then, starting here on my left, Mark Chaplin, who's a principal in the services function at the ISF.
Hi, Mark. Hi, fellow panelists. I'm Mark Chaplin. I specialise in information risk management and very much looking forward to the conversation with all of you.
Next is Esther Schagen van Luyt, who's the principal in our Dutch office, very recently joined the ISF.
Hi, everyone. I used to be the former CISO of Deloitte Netherlands and Belgium, and I specialize now in helping our CISOs in the ISF membership, board cybersecurity governance, and security talent development.
And next to her is Paul Watts, a distinguished analyst in the research team, one of my colleagues.
Isn't this the coolest thing ever? Doing a podcast for real in the flesh. Yep. That's fantastic. And I'm just recovering from a bit of a flashback from the last keynote. Just remembering all those meetings about TLS 1.1 deprecation, and I'm nearly okay. Just give me another few minutes, I'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure there's flashbacks. We'll come back to you later. PSTD and all that, doesn't it? And then finally, Patrick Versteeg, who's the CISO at Vitera, which is based in Rotterdam.
Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you for having me. CISO at Vitera, self-employed. CISO from a lot of other companies, and I try to specialize in CISO leadership. So I know, Paul, you like as well. So.
I do like a little bit of leadership insights, absolutely. That's what gets me up in the morning.
So I was thinking, I spend a lot of time talking to CISOs. You spend a lot of time talking to CISOs. You used to be a CISO, so did you, and now you study the whole subject, and you are a CISO. So what the heck should we talk about, do you think? Any ideas?
Apple pie.
Could do. What do we have for breakfast, maybe? But when I sent out the email to gather you guys together, I tried to evoke sort of Marvel superheroes and said, you know, podcast guests, assemble. And I wonder if we can start there, because it's something you've talked about, Patrick, that sometimes CISOs try to be the hero. And I just wonder, is that a big problem, that you know, they've got that view of themselves as the savior of an organization, and that gets in the way of a lot of other things they could be doing?
Yeah, I genuinely think, thank you for the question, I think generally that is a problem, CISOs trying to be the hero. Ties a little bit into my talk as well with a fight night and an infinite mindset. So if you're a hero, you're trying to rescue the day. The problem is, what about the day and the day after tomorrow? What happens then? And if you're the hero, when are you going to celebrate? So I think you should be a sole CISO hero. I think it should be a joint effort of everybody in a company.
In the movies, you never see the consequences, do you? The heroes just walk away into the sunset, or the explosion goes off behind them, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe Esther, you can recall from Deloitte as well that the day is never done as a CISO.
No, but I think it's not just a CISO thing. I think the hero gen is something that many people in security possess. It's something that probably puts us in this industry in the first place. At least for me, that's what attracted me to the industry when I didn't know security was amazing, is the desire to protect the people I care about. And so I think many of us in this room listening to the podcast might have that same ambition and drive. And I think with a CISO, where you're responsible for the security of your organization, there it's felt the heaviest, and it might go too far at times.
Yeah, I think that's true, because I certainly, with talking to a lot of CISOs, they're a particular kind of person. They're not the same person, but they do have, I think, often see themselves as the conscience of the company. and they have, their role is there to, you know, to show the way in some respects.
But the thing with that is it's, there's a perception thing. So whilst we think we're the heroes, the business still thinks we're the villains, because we've still got this communication rift where we're doing the good thing. Think about James Bond, okay, 007, right? When James Bond does a good job, the world sees another day. But does anyone care that James Bond did that? Sometimes being a CISO and, you know, putting these little fires out makes you feel a little bit like that. When you're doing a good job, nobody really cares. When you're doing a bad job, you're the villain. So how do we work past that and celebrate a little bit more about what we do and try and make that a shared success in an organisation?
But is success for a CISO villainy for someone else? Because sometimes you're getting in the way of what the organisation might want to be.
It can be, but I think that comes back to communication. So as we talk about in the Insight series for leadership, it's a constant equation that's trying to be balanced. So if you're a risk practitioner and your sole focus is on risk management, managing that risk register, and you're managing that risk to tolerance, and you're keeping it there, you're still the villain if the business is saying, we're prepared to break a few eggs to make this omelette. Now, if that communication is not established and you're not resonating with what the business is trying to do at any point in time, you're doing a good job, but you're holding the handbrake of the business up because that communication is not going. Ergo, you're personified as a villain. It's all about that communication. It's so important. And sometimes we don't get it quite right, Mark.
No.
I think there's also an interesting point around that there's some perversion in being the hero. So what we often see, particularly if you're not in an organization where the board naturally values your role as a CISO, the situation that you then get if there's a zero day or there's an incident, that's the moment when the board wants to speak to you. Yeah. So as a CISO, you're almost waiting and sitting around until something happens, because then that is the moment that you become important to the organization. You get to shine, you get to do your thing, save the day. But that is, of course, a terrible situation where you kind of hoping and waiting for an incident to happen, because then you get the attention, you get your budget, you get your people.
But there's a balance. I think there's like a split personality here, because there are CISOs that set out to be a hero and there are some that don't set out to be a hero. And I talk to CISOs that probably are heroes and they don't know it. They just don't shout about their successes. They don't communicate enough for the audience, the board, the risk committee, the executive committee, to actually understand the value they're bringing. So one is not communicating. But I think there's a villainy side as well. There is the, you know, a beg for forgiveness afterwards. So, you know, if you're going to manipulate or you're going to modify the landscape, so to speak, there are times when you might have a darker side just to get the job done.
Yeah, but you talk to people and it's obvious that what they want to do is be seen in that heroic light. And that you have to sort of manage expectations.
I think in all walks of life, there are variations of that.
Yeah, not just CISOs. No.
I think people get tired of heroes. Mm. So, okay. If you look at all the movies that have come out, like Superman and Aquaman and God knows what, and I definitely don't know the difference between Marvel or DC, but what you've seen there is that they start making those movies of combined teams. The Justice League, yeah. Those kind of things. And actually my team, when we had the first WhatsApp channel, they put up the logo of the Justice League. But for me, it's an indicator. If you look at Black Adam, which is a complete anti-hero, yeah. People get tired of heroes. Mm. So I agree with Mark, you should celebrate your successes. Mm. But if you are trying to be the hero in the company, people get tired of you. It should be a joint effort between you, your peers, and definitely the team that's behind you.
Just something you said there, and let's just back that up a little bit. So, okay, we don't want to be CISO man or CISO girl, but it's kind of cool. But I think branding is really important. So if you're just, the presentation I heard earlier, I mean, it's been a long day, so my mind has gone to rubble, but it was, you know, I'm a CISO, and my expectation is everybody knows who I am and what it is I'm supposed to do. But the reality is, if you stop five people in that building and say, do you know what the CISO is, they'll say, what's a CISO? Now, if you haven't got a good brand and you haven't got a good alignment with the vision and values of the organization, you're just an annoying person who's forcing me to change my passwords or more mandatory training. Shall I do it? Next, next. A-C, finish, walk away. If you haven't got a good brand affiliated to what you're trying to do as a security leader, it's really hard to articulate your purpose in life. And then you're just the person that's putting out bin fires everywhere. That's not a great brand to hang your vision and strategy on, is it?
No. But did I guess, did any of you guys get into it thinking you would be the hero? And afterwards you kind of thought, no, I actually I need to be much more quiet and, but like you say, have that presence and that visibility, but just not.
I'll tell you what I would say, you know, so in, especially in an immature organisation, you just go putting out fire after fire after fire after fire, and after a while it becomes a little bit, it would just be good if we could spend a little bit of time going after the arsonist, because I think that's more of a value proposition for me. You know, that's something more progressive and useful for our organisation. But if they're not on the bandwagon with you, they just want you to put out the fires. And when you're not putting out the fires, just stay out there and just don't get in the way. Again, it's brand and perception that we need to work on. Our ability to market what we do is really, really important. And it is a blind spot for a lot of security leaders. It gets missed.
Yeah, but I guess, I mean, behind all this, a separate question I was going to ask is that, do you have anything in common as CISOs? Because, you know, not wishing to cast aspersions, but there's a range of ages here and a range of experiences. But I just wonder if, you know, if you were the same kind of CISO that Patrick is or was or Paul, is it a shifting collection of talents and qualities that the CISO has? There's no common core to that.
I think as a CISO, so I was CISO for Deloitte, but before I was CISO there, I used to work in the business side of Deloitte, and that very much shaped my CISO-ship. Because I knew what the organization was doing, how they made money, what assets they used, how people use those assets. Mm-hmm. And so for me, trying to guard them was very pragmatic because I knew the ways that people would try and go around it or what they wanted to do, what their clients needed. So it made me a very business-grounded CISO by default, which really helped me at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because I didn't need to learn all that coming in with just security knowledge. And then I guess I'm a little bit of a younger CISO, and I very much grew up in a time where we spend a lot of attention on well-being in our consulting teams already. Mm-hmm. But of course, when I moved to the CISO function, it became very apparent to me that security professionals sometimes have a very difficult work life and they need taking care of. Yeah. And that was a role that I very happily took and very much enjoyed that. But I think it's something which is more recent and maybe many CISOs are not doing a lot. So I'd say that makes me a little bit.
Did you have a good work-life balance when you went into the CISO role? Did you have expectations and were they met when you went into that role from a?
I was aware of the life that would happen if there was an incident. So there's expectations around that. But outside of that, I very much try to limit my work times to regular business hours because that's the behavior I wanted to role model also for the people in my team. And I was very successful in that, but was very strict. So trying to be as effective as possible in the time I was allotted during business hours if I really needed to do something, but people would not see me sending out emails in the night or in the weekend unless we had an incident.
Because I mean, the work that we do, Mark, I believe very much that a CISO should have evenings and they should have a weekend. And, you know, a lot of CISOs, you seem to think they're starting early, they're finishing late, they're always running over, they're always sending emails, and there's always things going on a Saturday and a Sunday, and, you know, it's back to Monday. Mm. So I think there is a need to try and get this balance right. And again, it does vary significantly from one CISO to the next.
For me, I experienced, particularly when we had things like Log4j and Print Nightmare, and you go to periods of extended work times, you start to realize that it's very important to keep those times free, because if you keep the elastic band stretched, it's gonna wear out. So it needs to go back so you can scale up in case there is an incident. And I think too often, if you already work 80 hours a week, you are already doing evening and weekends, and then something happens and you need to scale up, you can't do it anymore. At least I felt I wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, I remember one of the former chief execs of Yahoo said balance is for trapeze artists. And she was very much like, you know, you can sometimes, yeah, you will get your life and you'll be able to live it, but sometimes you have to be there. And I guess that's, but I don't know if you guys, when in the early days of being a CISO, did you have any, was it all work and no life?
I'm just taking back a lot of things I already did during my talk, but this is an infinite game.
Okay.
So you don't know who the players are, you don't know what the rules are, you don't know how it's never going to end.
Nope.
There's no winning or losing, so this is a continuous evolution of work coming your way as well. Mm-hmm. So you need to just look at your work and say, well, Friday evening is Monday morning. What can I do over the weekend? And people are sleeping, people don't want to be bothered, things like that. So I fully agree with Esther then. if you say, well, if I have an incident, you need to work. I'm not proud of it, but I worked on my the birthday of my son because we had an incident. Right. Those kind of things happen as a CISO.
Yeah.
But mostly, if you take one step back and you take a proper look at all your work, you can see that the work will be never ending. It's an infinite game that you need to play because that's always changing. So you need to just be good in prioritizing that work and try to make it fit within business hours. And then when the day is done, it will be the work will be there tomorrow. And if you're not hacked or you don't have a data leak, most likely your work can wait until the next day or till the Monday morning.
Mm.
And of course, sometimes you need to do something on a Saturday or a Sunday or in the evenings. But if you look at it a little bit from a distance, you can see that it's never ending, and therefore you can just say, okay,
I agree with that.
It will be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
Permission to be controversial.
By all means.
I think a lot of CISOs are their own
120 hours a week.
I think CISOs are their own worst enemy. I think security leaders sometimes are their own worst enemy, and I stand in the mirror and I accuse myself of that. We are desperate to try and find our way, be recognised in the boardroom and be loved by the business, and we will say yes to absolutely everything, and our eagerness to please means that we stockpile things that really shouldn't be our problem. That's point number one. Point number two, a lot of CISOs have a control issue. And they don't know when to delegate, and they don't know when to say no. And if you put those two things together and then add a major incident or add a crisis or add an existential event, and that is the tipping point, and that is why CISOs leave the industry, it's why CISOs burn out. And there needs to be a degree of balance. Now, as a non-practitioner, which I am now, it's easy for me to say that. But if I've learned anything over the years of being in a security leader, it's learn to say no and manage expectations and feel comfortable in delegating. Hire people that are better than you. Trust them and empower them, because otherwise you are going to be stuck in this endless hamster wheel where you're never going to have an evening, you're never going to have a weekend, and you are going to miss things. You know, you have one life. You have to live it, and you can be a successful security leader. You've got to get that balance right. And we can support each other in doing that. I think we find it very difficult. You know, we've got to be these, you know, put your big boy and big girl pants on and behave like a CXO and be completely resilient and be able to take anything on and roll with the punches, and you don't want to be seen to be vulnerable. But actually, I think it's important to know we have our limits as well.
Yeah, but I guess back to that hero thing, just, you know, people step up to them and think, well, that's what the business expects of me. But why should they? I mean, that's part of the problem as well, isn't it? Just because the business runs 24/7, so someone's got to oversee it. And all of, I think, again, that conscience of the company, CISO, can sometimes step up to that.
A good transition that I think I'm seeing in a CISO role is where we're moving from quite technically proficient CISOs to CISOs with a different skill set that is more focused on communication and making business cases, which is, I do think the technical skill set is very important, but it's moving also away from the CISO being the best and smartest and most senior person in the team and having to portray it out all the time, to saying, I am not the subject matter expert on all of these things anymore. I've got people in my team for that. Let me delegate it. And I have a different set of tasks to fulfill as a CISO, as your leader. But it's being able to recognize, and that was difficult for me as a young CISO coming in, particularly because I had people older than me in a team to whom I initially felt that I had to portray that I was the smartest, bestest person until I finally got to realize that I could very much rely on them to be smarter and better than me, and I could help them in different ways.
But also, as well, you challenged their expectations of what the role was. I mean, they were like, well, that's how we be a CISO. But why would you accept that? I mean, certainly we've had that at the ISF. There's some younger members of the team go, well, why do you do it like that? And it was just, and that's been quite a shock sometimes to sort of say, well, that's a very good question. Why are we doing it like that? And I think, to your point, maybe people don't challenge that enough.
And I think what Esther was saying is perfectly valid. And actually, that's almost the next paper in the leadership series is taking a bit of a step back and saying, well, what actually is a security leader now? Because we always talk about security leadership as a single entity, that pinnacle, that chief information security officer. But the reality of it is, if you look at the demands of most CISOs, and it is a sweeping generalisation, the focus, certainly in my last, I was a global CISO and a big multinational organization, I didn't have any time to spend on tech. I didn't have any time to be in the engine room or doing any of that BAU stuff. It was boardroom, private equity meetings, it was business cases, it was finance, it was communications, it was all of these things. And I realized that the part of the job I loved the most was the technology, but I made an unconscious choice and decision when I became a leader and the security leadership role evolved that I had to be a business person and I had to, like you say, have other people in the team that could do those roles. Mm. So maybe now security leadership decomposes into a number of discrete roles. And what I want to do, and I think, you know, I'd be really interested in people's views on this, is it's just looking at the operating model of security, because it doesn't have to be a person at the top, function, and teams. Let's look at this in slightly different ways. I think it is time to evolve security operation models. So we are going to look at that a little bit more detail for sure.
Yeah, every time we have a conversation about CISOs, I start thinking about, okay, is what's unique about the CISO role? Because some of the things we're describing here apply to lots of different roles in organizations. So isn't it, so I would like to try and understand what is it that's unique about a CISO's capabilities, attributes, you know, what that day-to-day role looks like. I mean, the job description seems to just get longer and longer and longer when you talk to the CISO. They just seem to wear more hats.
Maybe it's for each organization needs a different type of CISO, and that's the... But whether there's something behind that, I don't know that, you know, you can... If you were to extract all the CISOs, grind them down, what would be the raw material that there? Maybe there's something common there, but I would imagine most organizations need very different things.
Yeah, they're probably not called a CISO if they're doing more... If they're successful and they're doing more technical activities. So if you've got a team, Paul, in your previous role that's doing that and you're directing that, you're setting expectations, you're coordinating your teams, you're doing all of those things. At some point, someone, as a security leader or a risk leader, has got to be engaging with the business on a regular basis, so they're doing the finances and everything like that. So I just want to go back to this. What is it, what are those attributes, or those characteristics of a CISO that make our positive and negative circumstances we find ourselves in unique to CISO, and then what isn't? Because there's probably a lot a CISO can do in their own organization with their peers to actually overcome some of these challenges. And you, Patrick, were talking about what's in your control and out of your control. And even I think you've been describing some of the things that you've done to try and get more control over that situation. You can't control everything, but are there more things that CISOs can do, to all three of you, that they can do to try and get a handle on and increase or improve the positives and reduce the negative aspects of their role?
I think we look at CISOs as a generic population where we say, well, you have doctors, you have CEOs, you have CFOs, you have CISOs. Yeah. And we know what a doctor is, we know what education he did, mm-hmm. we know what time he spent studying at university, we know how long his internship was, and that's... So if you look at CISO, the C of CISO is not always chief. There are companies there that make it corporate. Right. And there is nothing to chief for the CISO at a company like that. Mm. And I think there were the struggle starts. I know Fred van Noort here in the Netherlands, he has been advocating for a CISO quality system, like you have with physiotherapists. Mm. They need to do their regularly trainings and attend conferences like this great one, but also are weighted against their experience, their roles they have in an organization, and those kind of things. And I think it starts with better job descriptions. I'm a consultant and very happy with Viterra at the moment. But what you see in job descriptions is that they want a CISO who has who is a certified ethical hacker, so like OSCP, like very, very in-depth. Then he needs to have an MBA. He needs to have yada, yada, yada. And they actually don't know what they're asking for. And that comes because the role is not clear. Mm. So now with new legislation coming our way, I think everybody's buzzing a little bit about the NIS2 here in Europe. Great. Yeah, more work. I think it will be more and more clear that there will be accountability at the highest level for the company, that somebody says you're accountable, and that will drive, I think, the same structure as we've seen in the US, more CISOs in the board, so we will see that in the Netherlands as well, and possibly throughout Europe. And with that, possibly the job will be refined a lot better. Mm. but how can you make CISOs better? Well, as long as we don't have a proper distinction what a CISO is,
and
it's clearly defined. If I tell you you're going to a specialist for oncology, you know what you're going to get and what the person is. But if you tell somebody in the business you're going to meet the CISO, that can be a very educated business person, that can be somebody who came up from technology, that can be somebody who was head of paperclips 2 weeks ago.
Lucky dip.
And then draw the sword of stick because they do need to do an ISO certification or something like that. Tech, you're the CISO. So,
I think we're going about it all wrong. It really winds me up when you see, like, we need a CISO. You go on LinkedIn, it's like, CISO required, apply within. And it's like, you say, it's absolute horlicks. You know, no two CISOs are created equally. Because actually, I think the approach to looking for and the talent acquisition for a security leader is about the outcome. What is it that you want that security leader to do for your organization and reverse engineer from the outcome? I hate the idea of creating a quality management system for security leaders, which means that I've got to go and get two of those and one of those and three of those and be able to juggle and stand on my head and do this and do that. That might create a technically competent CISO. But then look at that against what the organization's trying to do. Actually, you just needed a really, really good communicator and a really good problem solver and all of that. And it's completely missed in a technical specification of what a security leader is. And I think this applies in a lot of technical roles where you see it all the time where you say you need 8 years worth of Docker experience. Oh, it's only been around for four. I know that's not quite right. But the point is, to your point, people don't know what they're asking for. So let's start with the outcome and work backwards to say, how can we source somebody who can get to that outcome? What are those qualities and source that resource?
But presumably a lot of those job descriptions come from the organization who has a CISO, or did have, and that's what they've done. So sometimes it's sort of, you're getting what you already have.
Oh, I didn't say we were part of the problem, because we are, but there's a solution we need to work on.
It takes 1 minute to copy and paste.
Yeah. Well, he does it all the time.
But to be fair, there's a lot being done on developing a framework to take some of the source material and make better job descriptions. Mm. So in the US, we've got the NIST SP800-181. It's very catchy. Yeah. It's basically the cybersecurity workforce framework. It's been around for, I think, about 2017. Mm-hmm. That lists all kinds of roles and descriptions, and then lists knowledge, skills, and abilities associated with those roles. And recently, we got an alternative here in Europe, I think 2021, which is the European Cybersecurity Skills Framework, that also explicitly lists the CISO role with tasks, skills, abilities. So that forms some of the standardized language that we can at least use to describe what CISOs are doing and where they may be still lacking.
Yeah, but I think it is very tied very difficult, particularly to that organization, and certainly Paul and I have talked about, you know, just as well, because we did some work on governance last year, and that starting point should be, well, what do your organization need you to do? Because if you're doing other things, that's clearly wasted work. But I think there's a certain maturity there as well that organizations and CISOs have to go through. But just to jump on, move on a bit, but to debate as well just some of that extra work CISOs might have to be doing. The presentation we had just before this about quantum and 2024, the start of the apocalypse. Are you glad you're not a CISO? Are you glad you're not a CISO? Or, you know, Patrick, are you going to be very, very busy next year?
I actually, no. I had a workshop while I was still a CISO at Deloitte from one of our resident Deloitte experts on quantum. Yeah. And so we went through what we needed to do to prepare. Right. And it was a great workshop, prepared me greatly to understand what was actually being said in this talk. Mm. But it was also, I was looking at that and thinking, listen, I've got a full roadmap for the next 3 years. Where am I going to find the time to add quantum to this? I see that I need to start now and not wait until we've got clarity on when Armageddon is going to hit. Mm. But it doesn't fit in the timelines and the budgets that we usually work with as CISOs, at least not in the size of organization that Deloitte is.
I'm 100% with you on that. You know, I was getting really excited and really into that presentation and then a little bit daunted about what the implications were. And it wasn't about the technicalities of doing that. You know, I was a little bit tongue-in-cheek when I talked about the pain of the deprecation of TLS 1.1 and 2 and so on and so forth. Because the challenge wasn't the technicalities of what we had to do. We can kind of work that out. Okay, it's an exciting challenge, right? This is a cool gig that we've got here. It's translating all of that. And the thing that I kept coming back to when my mind was getting slowly fried by that presentation was, how the hell am I going to explain this to my mum? And that's my litmus test, right? Because if I can't explain that in something that the business says, okay, we've really got to take this seriously, then we've got a massive hill to climb. And please don't say, oh, well, it's just going to come down to the regulation's going to make you do it. We've got to get past that. Mm. So if anybody out there knows how we can take that last plenary and translate that into something I can explain to my mum, and she says, okay, then we kind of need to find a way to fit this into our schedules, then you are set for life. But I really do worry, all joking aside, is that how will we articulate that to our businesses and muster them to move at the speed we probably need to mitigate said apocalypse? Mm. That I really feel that is quite a daunting challenge. You look like you've got this.
It's like,
come on, Patrick, how are you going to do this? Come on.
On the spot. So we're not a bank or something like that. So we worry a little bit less about, if I got everything right, because it was highly complex for me, we worry a little bit less about cryptography. Sorry, for the English. So the introduction of quantum computing, I see possibly that it's been driven by a business initiative on our side. We have very keen people who use models to predict how crops will, what the quality of crops will be based on weather models and those kind of things. And they're very keen on that, and they're using AWS and all kinds of non-standardized IT products to do that. And for us at Vitera, that's a project. And if they say, well, I'm going to use quantum computing for that, I have somebody in the project team for security, and they need to pick it up there, basically.
Okay.
The other thing is, for me, what I took away is that, yeah, something's going to change with certificates. Well, most likely I'm going to ask the IT operation, because that ties into...
Delegate it. That's his answer.
Yeah, well, don't put problems on your... You just said, don't put problems on your plate that are not yours.
Absolutely.
Certificate replacement is not my problem. Yes. Okay. The only thing that I need to do is to have a proper view on what certificates are in place, are they still secure, and do they fit with what we transfer in data in the business. And it might be that if you still have a TLS 1.0 certificate in play, or an SSL version 3 certificate in play, that does not directly mean that everything is hacked and open and everybody screams and yells that it's so easy. And I've not seen, for us, we do some email traffic with a bank in Australia that does not support anything above, I think, TLS 1.0. Mm-hmm. So is that a problem, is the question. And this might be obviously a problem, but the question is where and when will it be a business problem? Because it's definitely not my problem.
I think my point is when it becomes a mandate through regulation, it's a forced sell, it's something you've got to do, and someone's got to explain that business case and you've got to spend some money to do that. I get the point that the opportunities that quantum provides are immense, absolutely immense, and we need to get away from not being the people that, you know, the people that say no all the time. Mm. We absolutely need to embrace that technology with a semblance of balance. But when we're having to clean up after ourselves, when we are having to worry about smashable encryption algorithms that the regulators then say, you can't trade, you can't use this, that's a hard sell in amongst everything else. The challenge that you've got is the business is really interested in leveraging and innovating new technology to get ahead of the competition and be successful. They don't give a monkeys about all that cleanup stuff behind. And yes, you can delegate the technicalities of making it happen, but when you need the funding and the overheads to do that, and it's to the detriment of that innovation, it's another forced sell. And here we are, we're back to square one. If, however, they had a little bit of situational awareness and recognized that there is a little bit of ongoing maintenance that needs to be done to kind of maintain yourself in a safe zone, yes, you can innovate, but you've got to clean up from behind you, because otherwise you're setting yourself up for central problems in the future. That's great. But that's a difficult conversation in any boardroom.
Yeah, it is, but I don't have to clean up. Why do you... You're repeating. Maybe I'm a bit blunt here, but no. You said don't take on problems that are not yours.
Yeah, but the thing is, sometimes you're given those problems because there's technology. That's what people say, oh, you're the technology guy, aren't you? You do technology.
No, I'm not the technology guy. I'm the CISO guy. I keep the company secure.
Right.
I give guidelines. And
your
give
organization is, understands that.
And I give direction. And I have a very nice operational security team who does something with EDR and MDR and those kind of things. But when it comes to this, if the business wants to go and wants to fly with quantum computing, and I say, listen, you need to do something about security, and they're not doing it, that's fine. That's a risk. It's a company. And in the heart of a company, it's risk-taking. No risk-taking, there's no revenue. That's impossible. Risk has two sides. Bad things that you can lose, but risk also gives you good things that you can win. And then if there needs to be a cleanup, it's not my cleanup, it's a business cleanup. Yeah. And if they put up the money and the willingness to clean it up, we'll provide the means and measures to do so, that's fine.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but regulatory changes, certainly in a regulated entity like a bank, is always provocative, you know. Yeah. And that conversation, and no matter how you delegate it or cut it, it is always going to come your way first. How you deal with that, yes, it's the business's problem, and we have to advise them of the pros and cons of doing that. But when it's a regulatory change, it's a non-negotiable and it's a forced sell. It's still a challenge. And I think, you know, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but the point that I'm trying to make here is that kind of separation of responsibility and accountability is something that we have to address.
Yes.
Otherwise, we will face these problems again and again and again. And I think this is quite a substantive
one. And regular change normally comes over time. So if you look at the NIS2, that's applicable in October 2024. And to be honest, I'm not really concerned about it because I got my security basic hygiene in order. I've got the team here. I've got a couple of guys here from the team, actually. And I need to do something about a little bit about governance and telling somebody that he's accountable around October 2024. And I need to do something about a notification. And that's it. Yeah. Those regulations that come your way, I normally, if you have good security hygiene, those regulations are normally not a problem. The problem starts when those regulations come your way and you did not have a security team, you did not have a CISO, yeah, you did not have any leadership that was anyhow security savvy. Then
Mark,
the problem starts.
I wanted to ask you about the engagements you do with services. Are a lot of those brought about by regulatory changes or people trying to make sure they are compliant? I just wonder if that does form the landscape of what people do. I guess it depends on the sector.
Yeah, I mean, it's a perpetual debate, isn't it? You know, risk management, compliance, and I think our view is you can do both. You can get the balance right, and if you get your hygiene right or you're mature enough, you can address that. Mm. I just wanted to come back to something on the quantum, because Konstantinos up here doing that session, I think it's the third or fourth time he's presented for us. Mm. That's the first time I've actually thought I probably need to pay attention to quantum now.
And get out of crypto as
well. When he put those dates out. And I think the thing with quantum is that moment that it breaks crypto, we're all in the same boat. And it will be a race. And I think organizations with some funding are probably going to be ahead of that. And I just wanted to make a point for those of you that are listening, that if you're in Esther's position or her last position of, I'm already in the middle of a strategy or a roadmap, so I'm not going to disrupt that or change that significantly. Mm-hmm. You need to externalize that requirement, and the ISF membership is one way of doing that. So, mm-hmm. you know, any CISOs listening to this is actually talk to the team, you know, talk to Paul, talk to Esther, mm-hmm. talk to the rest of the team, and actually identify how do we address this, because I can see it coming, actually, Paul, Patrick, Esther. When it happens, everybody will be reacting too late, just like, you know, Y2K and everything else.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a sudden race. So have the conversations now, set the scenes, probably what you're doing, Patrick, and at least try and communicate effectively so that the business understands, okay, maybe this is a risk that we need to be looking at and thinking about now. Mm-hmm. And if it's 2 years, if it's 7 years, if it's, you know, beyond a decade, at least have it on your radar.
I agree with that. But what I would say is, you know, I feel the kind of frustrations when we're talking about this. I mean, you and I have talked about stuff like this over and over and over again. The potential of security teams in organizations is vast. Yet we're still stuck in this world where we are slaves to the compliance culture. We've got to get past the compliance culture, having that chokehold on what we can do for our business. I want to be talking, you know, I want to be having sessions in the Congress where we're talking about the value we bring to organisations. I don't want to be talking about NIST all the time. I don't want to be talking about ISO. I don't want to be talking about all of that stuff. I want to be talking about the value and the innovation and the opportunity we can bring. Like you say, I'm with you. Let's delegate that compliance stuff and push it somewhere elsewhere. But it comes back to what I said earlier. I think a change in the way that we operate our security, you know, communities of practice needs a change. Otherwise, it's always going to be deal with compliance first. And if you've got 20 seconds of your day left, you can do some cool stuff. Mm. But compliance comes first. And I do worry about that.
Yeah, but just to pick up on one of the questions that was sent in as well, just because is it just a resourcing issue, or is it a case of making your organisation understand where you should be spending your resources and what you should be spending your time on? You shouldn't be doing that technical stuff. You shouldn't be doing the compliance stuff, because, like you say, Paul, and I guess others as well, you should be much better or employed thinking about strategy and helping the organisation as well.
Resourcing is always a problem.
Yeah.
It's even if you would have unlimited budget. Resourcing is a problem to get the right people in the right quality doing the right things.
Yeah.
And if you have 50 people working for you that make rubbish, that doesn't help as well.
Yeah, true.
But what I normally see is that you don't get... the companies I've worked for is that you need to do a lot of stuff yourself. And I possibly Esther and Paul, Mark, you can attest to that. That just having a CISO office with like 10 people there where you can delegate all kinds of stuff and you can sit back as a CISO, kick your heels up and think, what will be the next quantum cybersecurity strategy for the next 10 years for the company? Yeah, that's something you need to do in the weekends or something like that, because you normally don't have those people that do all kinds of stuff for you. Luckily, I have 2-3 people that run some of the practices for me, and I'm really, really, really lucky that I have those people in my team.
I've got a Mark Ward, so Threat Horizon covers all of our...
Right, okay, good.
So we've got it covered.
Everybody needs a Mark Ward. Easy,
but you talk about, you know, you don't have an open checkbook. That's why you have risk management. I mean, risk management will help you, if you get it right, engage with the business and start having a conversation around where do you prioritise and invest your money, resources and time. It's just a lot of organisations aren't anywhere near close to being able to do that at the moment.
True.
So, you know, we can't complain about resources if we haven't convinced the powers that be and the asset owners and the business leaders of where they need to invest that. We could be spending money in the wrong place.
Probably are.
I'd be interested to know.
Going back to the point on regulation, so you know there's going to be a swath of regulation coming in from the European Commission and all kinds of things cyber, and that I think for CISOs is a real big problem coming up in terms of the resourcing. I think we're already in a state, particularly in some sectors which are bound by more of that compliance, that we do see a significant amount of our time going to that direction rather than doing actual security. And it's going to get much, much worse with the regulation coming in. I do think the regulation is good. We need it. It's there for a reason. I think it's important. But I do wonder about how we're going to shape security towards the future, because you can't have a security team as a CISO who's only doing compliance. Yeah. That's not the way forward. We need them to do actual security to keep the company safe.
Yeah.
And so that's where I see a challenge, and also maybe something where we as ISF should consider how we're going to help CISOs through that, given that we won't have magically more people doing this kind of work for us.
Just a controversial question. What is it about this new compliance coming along that is the problem? Is it telling us lots of things that we should have been doing and that we weren't? Or is it telling us to do things we're already doing and we've just got to demonstrate that to more people? Where is the problem for CISOs?
So my answer would be is that there, from my experience, that there are so many companies, and I don't know how the rest of the panel views that, but there are so many companies that does not have a proper cybersecurity practice in place. So if you go to the CFO, CIO, CEO and ask them, who's your CISO? Who's running your who's your CISO? Who's running your cybersecurity practice? I think if you go to a little bit the smaller companies, so not the Fortune 500 one, but they don't have an answer. They don't have an IT. It's somebody that fixes it at IT, something like that. Mm. And then the problem starts.
I would add to that by saying that in a lot of organizations, compliance is an illusion of good security. Because if you take that compliance away and you look at the underlying culture, and you look at the business engagement and you look at the identity and the vision and the purpose and the value, and there's nothing there, that was just an illusion.
But this is not a new conversation. We've been having this conversation for 15 years. I mean, it's not new.
And here we are.
Still debating it.
So what are we doing wrong, Mark?
Well, I'm just going to say risk management.
He's always going to say risk management.
I think it's communication.
Yeah.
So I have an upcoming presentation for CFOs. So we CISOs attend cybersecurity conferences and cybersecurity meetings and meeting the same CISOs. So I actually are now opting for management meetings where I have the availability to present before CFOs, CIOs, CEOs. And there is where I want to start conversation.
Yeah, we're a bit of a, not quite a cult, but we're a definite community, aren't we? Quite small, and we talk to each other.
Definitely.
And that was one of the questions as well, just sort of why is that need for fellow feeling when CFOs, I guess they go to finance conferences, but equally, they don't have their own language, do they? I don't know. I mean, is it the same for any of those professional places?
I don't know. Where do all the CFOs hang out on a Saturday night?
Let's go find out.
I found some spots.
They're the ones with the money. They'll be in the best places.
Definitely.
The $4 tonight, then.
Yeah.
Casino.
Yeah, put it all on red. There you go. That's your solution to risk management. Put it all on red.
Yeah, definitely. Take the risk. Maybe it's an opportunity as well, because it comes up. So just to round off on a slightly controversial question, I suppose, is the CISO doomed? Is there going to be ones? Because the reason I asked that is because of Paul, your latest paper on the BISO, you know, the Business Information Security Officer. Are they a threat? Are they, to that role? Because certainly the clues in the name, they're much more about that engagement with business. And whether the CISOs who see these, the BISOs coming up on the rails, should they be worried? Are they being edged out? Are they becoming those technical security leaders rather than anything else?
I think we are in a period of real transition for security leaders, and I see it as a massive opportunity. But we're only going to be able to exploit that opportunity if we take a really good step back and look at ourselves and think about what it is we are trying to do. Because if we don't do that, the problem is we've demystified technology. The business can go and do anything. You know, my mum, again, hi mum, she can build a data center in the cloud with a web browser and a credit card.
Yeah.
How do I stop that? I can stop it by forced regulation, and that just drives those behaviours underground. If we don't think differently about the way that we do this, then I think things will change. The reason why BISOs are becoming increasingly popular and successful is that they have a close affiliation to the business. They're all like little mini Esters, business first, but using security and that body of knowledge to help them be safe, but be innovative and be valuable. And they like that. So us sat in our ivory tower ticking these two boxes, that's no fun. So we've got to reconnect with the business. And if that means a change in the operating model or the characteristics of security leadership or even a fragmentation of what a CISO actually is, I think we need to stare that down and realise that now is the time for change.
Yeah, for me, it's quite positive. I think I see them as allies, as extension of the security team, and particularly maintaining a good relationship with the business and getting the insights there, what really needs to happen for them, that is more than a full-time job. And honestly, it would be great to get that done by BISOs and give the CISO a little bit more time to work on the content in terms of running security operations and things like that. So I think really they're here to help. That's how I see them, not as competition. Yep. And I think the CISO role, as it is now, is in many cases overburdened. So if you can share the burden, that's the best way forward.
Be a good thing. Yeah.
Read the paper.
Yeah. But do you see a lot of BISOs these days?
No.
Not out in the wild.
They don't do risk.
I've heard. No. The thing about risk is, whatever you're doing, you've got to demonstrate it's working. And if it's not working, you've got to change. So you need to track, keep score, demonstrate that, and where it's not working. So what we've been talking about for the last 15 years, 20 years or more, if it's not working, we should know why it's not working and change it. And where we find things work, we should adopt that. Mm. We should embrace it and promote it.
So are we hopeful about the CISO? Does it have a future?
Definitely.
Yeah.
But it's going to be wearing a different shirt and tie.
A different hat, perhaps.
Maybe a different hat.
Yeah, lots of different hats. So CISO's on a different hat. So
maybe not a shirt or a tie.
Definitely lip gloss.
I 100%
lip gloss. Yeah. Although Mark's still reeling from the fact that you two wouldn't share. That was terrible.
No, apparently it's not my colour.
Yeah, well, maybe it wasn't.
Maybe next time.
And on that bombshell.
on that note, we will end there. Thank you for staying and listening to us, and by all means, subscribe to the podcast. Thanks, everybody, as well, for keeping that discussion going. I think we could go on for a lot longer, so maybe we'll get everybody back together and maybe do it next year and see where we're all at, see if things have changed. Thank you.
Amazing. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed that. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues about the Analyst podcast. And you can now find ISF podcasts on all major podcast platforms. Look for our page on Audioboom, where you can subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. The podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn more about ISF research, tools, and guidance.